Thank you very much to all of you for your presentations. And thank you for actualizing cosmology, Russian cosmism to us with the concepts of the 50s and later on. Actually, after having the panel yesterday, today it became even more complicated. So we have done many things with Russian cosmism. We have historicized it, we have contextualized it, we have compared, we have differentiated it, and we have believed, we have saw how to believe into it, what happens if you believe into Russian cosmism, and how it spread into the arts. What I was missing a bit was two points, and maybe we can talk about this a little bit more. That's on the one hand, the explanation of how we can imagine if the ideal state of what is described in different ways as cosmism, if it is reached. You mentioned it at the end. What if we are all immortal already? So how can, or how did the protagonists you were reading, Fyodorov and others, imagine this ideal state when all the people who should be resurrected are resurrected? What did the women do when they were not involved in the story? Yeah, so that's one point. How would you describe this ideal state? And the other one is, what is so crucial about it for us today? This question has been raised yesterday evening, but we didn't have enough time to talk about it, so maybe we can come back to that now, please.
Well, I will maybe specify a little bit. First of all, I want to say about this gender sexist issue. One of the reasons why people from Christian tradition speaks only about fathers is that in Christian tradition, every human being is, I'd say, it's a sin. So even if it's a little girl, her identity via belief is father and son. Yeah, it's very sexist, but I'm showing another genealogy which is showing this context. But actually what was the idea is to a little bit differentiate the technical and continuous path to organizing immortality and the philosophical thinking about logical possibility of immortality, which constructs again what we were talking about, paradoxical generous acceptance of death, and in this paradoxical generous anti-egoistic acceptance of not being yourself, you are facilitating such indifference to death, that this extreme indifference to death makes you immortal. There is a wonderful episode in Andrei Platonov's novel Happy Moscow. One of the protagonists, Simeon Sartorius, he was a scientist, he had a love story, he's living his life, but all of a sudden he's in the market and it occurs to him that if he buys the passport of another person, he can start living another life when he's not a scientist, but somebody who is in this passport. So this extreme indifference to your own, how your life starts and how it ends, is something that confirms exactly the immortality of this very life. And this is the double bind, you know? You are within your life, but you are within the possibility of spit on your life. And this is the acceptance of your failure that makes you persevere and makes you make this anagogical ascending effort.
Do you want to add something to that?
Yeah, I want to probably get back to the point I made in the very beginning of my talk, because it's really relevant to your question. I personally tend to really object to treat Fyodorov's writings as a description of an of an ideal state, even though we can find numerous scenes or narratives within his texts. Yes, for me it is more, it makes more sense today to read it as a social critique, both politically and philosophically. At the same time, it has to be noted that when we speak of Russian cosmism in general, of course, each cosmist writer has a different perspective on what would be an ideal state. Getting back to Fyodorov, I could say that for him, an ideal condition, starts immediately after all of us accept the idea of resurrection for all as our universal task and as a regulative idea. After that, we start being transfigured from within, ethically, morally.
After the resurrection of all?
No. Once the task is set, once everyone agrees on the task, once it gets universal recognition and acknowledgement, this transformation starts. And of course, when everyone is, a resurrection is somehow executed, it's those who are resurrected and those who implement the task, they are already internally transformed.
Okay, so that's the state of immortality.
Well, because you know, I was taught not to take things not to take things serious when I read them, and to somehow all the time a little bit doubt things. But what I like in cosmism is a little bit sense of humor and doubting one's own, you know, agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that I could not say whether I believe in this ideal or not, but what is really constructive in cosmism and what relates it to communism is that a very important thing, and I think Boris Groys mentioned it, many people mentioned, that actually we don't need any ideal to descend to us and being imposed on us and to somehow, as it is in psychoanalysis, you know, some superego that mm-hmm. is like putting pressure on the matter. But matter is by definition already ideal. So this is a kernel of Marxism and of mm-hmm. all Marxist philosophers. Matter already contains the potential of communism, and there's no other way that it cannot develop otherwise. So in this way, Fyodorov also has this idea that matter can only be liturgically moving, and it is already ideal. It is working in this direction, so it doesn't have to wait for some abstraction to, как сказать, оплодотворить. To fertilize this matter. So yes. So it's not that this guy comes and fertilizes the matter, but the matter is already ready for that. I mean, it doesn't need some kind of external sacral force for it. This is something that was new in this materialist dialectics and monism.
Mm-hmm.
So entity, not binarity, like in Cartesian,
yeah.
Res extensa, thing and idea, mm-hmm. but entity, which is by definition there.
And is this something that we could call very actual, an actual problem, getting rid of the difference between nature and culture, for instance? I don't know, Alexei Pensin, maybe you want to say something about that. I thought you didn't make your last point where you wanted to bring us to some more current philosophical positions.
Yes, because I thought that for example, we discuss here as cosmos, and sometimes in this discussion it looks like cosmos is somehow opposed to what was more official side of, so I mean, if you take the Soviet period, like Marxism, so indeed it happened, because now definitely cosmism became a part of rather reactionary ideology in contemporary Russia, which somehow mixed with religious sentiments, with somehow could endorse even this sort of reality which is inhabits now. So it's, but of course it's in more classical forms, like in Fedorov, of course it's interesting system of thought maybe, but I was thinking rather about all these issues about resurrection, and it somehow reminds classical theological debates of maybe 11th century of Thomas Aquinas, who actually wrote the whole treatise about resurrection, and when he was discussing how we should resurrect, for example, again, the question of gender emerged, how we should resurrect the bodies we're able to produce all this sexual function or not, for example, or they should produce, I mean, shall they defecate or not, all these things which were quite material, and this was already, so all these things were quite already existing, and so it's not somehow super. Of course, you can say that Fedorov is a sort of radical secularization of Christianity in a sense, yes, which brings it to extreme and which somehow radicalizes its content by this sort of radical secularization, because European modernity, which also I think Marina was talking is here, so it was a broad secularization to with itself, like secular, but as we know from arguments from 20th century, that these contents which were somehow existing in medieval theology, they still persist in politics, as we still perceive many things through this religious, the whole model of subject, substance, all this legacy of Christian Trinity, which was mentioned yesterday. It was also implied in modern philosophical concept, really part of the bigger process of modernity, and this further of line probably is the most extreme, because it turns it into sort of not just secularizing some particular concept, but secularizing some activities, turning this concept into sort of action or virtual action, because it never realized, cosmism was never applied. And also, for example, many thinkers, like I was recently working on Locke, John Locke, we mentioned consciousness in your paper. John Locke actually invented the concept of consciousness because of question of the resurrection, because for him the question was proposed a better solution for a theological debate, how we will be resurrected again, continuing this big debate in our bodies or in whatever form, or like computer chips, or I don't know. So he said that consciousness is a perfect container of identity, as he understood consciousness, because it was like opposed to Cartesian view on consciousness, which Descartes was following Christian, so it was presenting as substance. Yeah? Also in Spinoza, whom I mentioned, the thinking and consciousness is like a substance. But in Locke already, he switched this paradigm to something different, because he actually invents the concept of subject, not the substance. And for him, consciousness is a sort of circular process of self-reflection, which cannot be presented as some sort of material or ideal substance, which is static and somehow given. Consciousness is self-reproducing itself. So it was already end of 17th century
when this
yes, so it was discussed. Was, I mean, if you take these more philosophical references, and what concerns Ilyenkov, I think, if or can discuss it later if you.
Yeah, maybe I open the floor for some more questions from the audience, because we have only, I was told, like 10 or 15 more minutes for our panel here, and I see one raised hand in the third row and then in the first row. Do you have a microphone? Can you bring it there? You have the microphone back there? So someone, okay. One moment. Well. Okay, you can shout as well.
No, but then I can't be translated back here. Hello?
Yeah. Okay, I saw you. You're the third one.
So shall I start?
Yes, please.
Question? Hi, thanks for your presentations. I felt it was very interesting dialectical materialist combination of the three paper, because at the beginning Marina proposed a kind of positive thesis, the positive materialist reading of Fyodorov, and then there was the negation on Alexei's part, the negative, and then Katie synthesized paradoxically Christian, Soviet Christian and cosmist elements, providing some sort of critique of also a Western line of Marxism, in at least in 20th century. So my first question is to Katie, because if I understood you correctly, this sort of, you began with this opposition of teleology and desire, and harshly criticized. Provide the reassessment, and actually reproduced, but correct me if I'm wrong, this sort of West and East kind of opposition between corrupted Deleuzeanism with the logic of desire and more ascetic. Sort of, you used a different, actually, you just run through literally so many thinkers, but the thing was that you clearly proposed this sort of, you know, very strict binary, on the one hand, Althusser, on the other hand, maybe Ilyenkov, on one hand, Deleuze, on the other hand, cosmist thinkers. So it's nice in a kind of provocative sense to kind of distinguish them, but how things getting more complicated when then you try to synthesize back the Christian elements, criticizing cosmism and actually affiliating
bit
interpretation
faster, bit shorter please
interpretation of cosmism.
No,
back.
I got the question.
Do you have an answer, or do you just want to take it as a comment?
Well, I quickly answer. Actually, there are certain directions and choices for emancipatory program, and this was my incentive to show that actually why we deal with Marxist philosophy and Soviet Marxist philosophy, it is that, and why we deal also with cosmism and what interrelates between cosmist treatment of certain notions and communist treatment of certain notions is what in post-war Western emancipatory theory is different. And this is a fact. You cannot deal with it otherwise, because you have certain notions which are taken as the banner of emancipation in one project and completely opposite notions which are taken as the banner of emancipation in the other. For instance, labor, culture, consciousness as against unconscious, ideal as part and parcel of meta. This is impossible as Althusserian and post-Althusserian emancipatory programs, and we have to deal with it and map it, and that's just a research work. So it's not that we have to make radical choices.
Let us hear another question in the third row. Please, can you bring the micro there?
Yeah, thank you. This was my introduction to this entire topic, and I hardly I'm beginning to know what Russian cosmism is, but I'm already very sure that I prefer it to French existentialism.
Why?
Because French existentialism is anti-spiritual. It is individualistic. It is narcissistic. It is solipsistic. It is myopic, in my estimation. It's navel-gazing and denial of connectivity, of community, of and it doesn't even analyze the material conditions which give rise to alienation. It completely disavows, I mean, even though Sartre was a communist supposedly for a brief time or whatever, I mean, in their works, they kind of disavow the material conditions and the labor relations. But and Russian, what you have been saying is just kind of, to me, sounds like the opposite, the very opposite of that. It's cosmic, it's expansive, it's connective, you know, it's very rooted in even indigenous spiritual forms, the collective prayers. So I'm just wondering if you can speak a little bit about the comparison or juxtaposition.
In a few words.
Well, collectivity is very important, actually. That again, something that I try to say, that even in Trinity you have this collectivity, right? You are three, you are two, and you are one. Trinity is a paradox of number. It is three, but at the same time, it's one. It's one as two and one as three. And at the same time, it's congelating with each other, but being separate. And never the self, but being the self. So you have such paradox that you have all the time to be in effort not to lose the grip of this paradox. So in this way, you can say that when you enter into this program, you are collectivized by definition. So this issue of collectiveness of consciousness and consciousness never being individual or psychic is well, certain agenda that you definitely get from Christianity. We shouldn't be ashamed of it, and definitely it's part and parcel of communist project.
I'm always, you know, when Lenin was somehow reading Hegel, for example, in his famous philosophical notes on, or philosophical notebooks on Hegel, he was, as you know, Lenin was really, how to say, very cruel in his formulation or expression. He could call a philosopher a sweet idiot, or he could use various sphering. So sometimes when he was reading Hegel, he was stressing some words, underlying them, and saying, it's again, as he secretly infiltrate Bozhenka, which means, you know, this sort of Russian language was also very flexible. So you can create a diminutive name for God. Bozhenka means like Gaddi, or I don't know how that, what the equivalent would be in English or German. Göttchen.
Göttchen,
I don't know. Yeah, something like. So they always want to somehow secretly infiltrate your small God within these idealist writers and all these things. So I'm always listening about this collectivity or this synergy. I always think that they were secretly wants to introduce his Göttchen, or and you won't immediately get very materialist and cynic in listening to this. So I think it's important. That's why I think Lyankov is important for me. He is not a mystic. He is not a sort of, William Blake figure or visionary, or somebody yesterday was. But he's quite technical philosopher who was built in international communist tradition of reading, Marx, Engels, Kant, and Hegel. So, and still he is able to produce quite speculative hypotheses, cosmological kind, from this legacy. And he refers, as I said, to Spinoza, actually tackling a very important question about attribute and mode in Spinoza, and trying to somehow very perversively, of course, to reread Spinoza, and he
too
actually...
Long.
was solving this question. So for me, I think this separation between cosmism and Marxism, I think we should keep it, but not saying that. Usually, what is a main question when you are saying that you are somehow related to this legacy and you're somehow supporting it? Oh, you're Marxist, you are just about how to feed the people, to give them various material goods, but what is about something more sublime and so on. So, but this is a way how actually theology enters, but I think we should be very conscious and sustain this sort of materialist understanding. And materialism in this sense could be very speculative, could be very paradoxical, like reading of Spinoza in the Lienkov text. So that's why I think this should be very critical about these sites. Yeah.
Okay, one last question in the back of the hall.
Thanks. I really have to go back. It's too tempting to go back to the question of sex and gender, because it came up several times, and it's not just about the fathers and the sons that we re-inhabit and repopulate the whole dead population through resurrection. It was mentioned several times in the past few evenings and days that one of the things is like to take the burden of procreation off of women. So it's in my scrambled notes. And I think it's very important to understand how this notion of cosmism gets gendered and then gets realized in different like formations. Bogdanov had totally different ideas about gender and so on. But like, what about these kind of old guys that are trying to, like, for them it seems more attractive to figure out where your dead people are, and instead of having sex, because it's also very, it's very protestantic. So, and maybe that's, I think we have to figure that out a little bit, because it didn't leave the whole, like, it didn't leave the techno-utopic culture. The guys still like would like to create little beings without making babies, without having sex.
Good. We won't be able to in 5 minutes. This.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, again, there is a big tradition even in Marxism of critique of psychoanalysis from this point of view, and a critique of sexuality and the division of Foucaultian division of between love and sexuality. I think Boris mentioned this text of Solovyov about the meaning of love. So the idea was to produce a certain ideational meta of everyone. And generally, this idea of division between joy and enjoyment. You know, the idea of having sex, procreation, is certain kind of indulging in enjoyment in this mundane life. But as I mentioned, mere life, bloß Leben, is forbidden. Let's forget it. We are living nova vita, new life. And in this new life, we have to do some other phenomena. So it's of, and I was talking to Anton, and I was telling him that this is coercive. But communism is also coercive, whether we want it or not. Many things in communism are coercive. So we have to have this in mind, that there are things that are our habits and part and parcel of our enjoyment, but there is also certain understanding of new matter. And cosmism as well as communism speaks about this new matter, nuova vita, and new conditions.
May I briefly add? First, I think we have to differentiate between two vast topics, the one of sexuality and the one of gender. I guess that if we try to read Fyodorov or any other cosmos through the lenses of gender theory, this won't get us anywhere. However, there are two things I would probably like to mention. First, I think it is possible to read Fyodorov in this new materialist fashion when gender is not understood in terms of identity. In the end of the day, if anyone is a father, or could be treated as a father, and anyone can be called a son, then the question of gender is not important. It has been sublated, overcome. And the second thing, and the second thing, I want to briefly recall this Platonov's novel *Happy Moscow*, which was already mentioned here. Its main protagonist, the young woman who is called Moscow, who falls in love, at a certain point starts to think that despite the fact that she fell in love, she doesn't really understand what for love affair is. And since there's communism, she simply doesn't understand what's the point. There are more important things to do than, you know, to engage in love affairs, to go for a date, yes, so probably this is also quite close to Fedorov's perspective on love. Love in a Christian sense, yes. Love as a collectivizing agent, as a social glue, yes. But love as romantic love, no, for Fedorov it was unacceptable.
So...
A comment, because again, I'm not expert in further at all, but I'm judging on what was said here. But I mean, he's in Marxist terms, what he suggests? He suggests to switch the mode of social reproduction, so from reproduction mode, which is based on sexuality, love, family, couple, childbirth, because actually he stressed, I checked this actually, he stressed this, he was critical of childbearing because it was mixed with what he calls lust, sexuality, passion, so he definitely dislike this.
You know,
sorry, can I finish?
Shortly.
So what he suggests that basically we're switching from this social reproduction based on gender sexuality to social reproduction based on excavation of the or resurrection of the dead. So it's interesting, again, to read this from this point of view, so from the point of view of reproduction. So it's interesting way of reproduction, which actually maybe not sexist already, but it might just abolish gender and replacing, shifting the reproduction from the moment of birth to another pole, to the moment of death and resurrection. So it's like shifting this from biopolitics to sort of
necrology.
For me, this was always, you know, unattractive issue, because birth is so, birth is considered to be the birth of the new, right? And forbidding to give birth is quite suspicious. Mm-hmm. But one psychoanalytical point that Fedorov was born as an illegitimate son to a Russian aristocrat, and by the way, his real name is Gagarin. So the beginning of Russian cosmism starts with a person whose name is Gagarin. But also you can take it psychoanalytically that he's an illegitimate son who was then expelled from his father's home, and he has this idea of not being born. And I know one researcher who was telling that his idea of resurrecting fathers is an inverted psychoanalytical desire to kill the fathers. But this is very, very...
There's a hidden
truth.
The
last thought about Fedorov, I thought he's it's very ecological. It's like recycling idea, yeah? Yeah, so it's like... Resurrection
no, but
is
let
recycling.
Me let me finish.
But what happens after recycling?
No,
recycling.
Everything will be solved. Everything will be solved if we understand. If we see that, I mean, what is the goal of Christ's second advent? Returning back to Adam Eve condition, and that's it. I mean, you don't need birth there. It's already perfect. So, this is some kind of retroactive idea of the true perfection, actually.
So I take this these two comments as last points, especially like the idea of recycling. I'm just wondering if no, the indeed, product of recycling can be something new.
You shouldn't throw out the plastic bags, but you shouldn't throw out the bodies. Dead bodies, you should somehow, yeah. It's like
but the Russians did it with Lenin already, so.
Yes, exactly. Yes, of course. And mausoleum was, if, yeah. No, it's
interesting.
It was a lot.
I fear the organizers will not invite me anymore if we don't stop now with our discussion. I have a little break before the next panel, which starts at 6 p.m. Is that still the plan? Okay, so I thank you all once more for your wonderful talks and discussion, and to all of you as well.